everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. This is a show that is really dedicated to uplifting you, inspiring you, transforming you, healing you, all those good things. So I'm so glad you're joining me today. I have a few announcements. Progressive Radio Network has a new phone line. It's actually a voicemail line, and you can leave any communication to any of the hosts, but I invite you to go up to this phone line. Leave me a message. Say hi. Tell me what you think about the show. Tell me if you are incorporating any of the strategies and the healing modalities that I'm sharing with you on the Love Code. It's just great to stay connected to my audience. So here is the number. It is 862-800-6805. And what PRN will do is take the messages and relay them over to me, so you don't actually talk to me directly. And I'm going to give you that number one more time, so get your pen, paper, pencil, computer ready. Here we go. It's 862-800-6805. And I really do hope to hear from you. I would love that. I also want to remind everyone I have a second show on Progressive Radio Network every week at 4 p.m. on Thursday called What Women Must Know. If you go to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, you will get all of these shows, The Love Code and What Women Must Know, sent to you. You can like me there at What Women Must Know. And if you go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and opt in there, I also will send you all of the shows and a lot of other great information that I gather and like to share with my audience and my community. So hope you will be liking me over at What Women Must Know and visiting me and opting in at drcherylselman.com. Now, let's talk about our conversation today. I love doing the Love Code because it's a chance to really be inspired to truly open our hearts and to know that we are here living in a world with immense possibilities for all of us. So my guest today is a dedicated teacher who has been serving people, helping people in many ways throughout his life. And I just want to share a little bit about Will, because you will really love this conversation. Will McCormick is my guest. And he is born into a tribe of movers and shakers. Lee has always lived out loud. He is the founder of the Integrative Life Center in Nashville, the Ranch Recovery Center in Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California, has been a creative force in the mental health and recovery scene for over 20 years. He founded Spirit Recovery Incorporated to produce healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. Lee is also a co-founder of Front Porch Partners, a consulting management and research development company working in the medical and behavioral health disciplines. And he is the author of his latest book called The Heart Reconnection Guidebook. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Will to the show. I'm sorry. I don't know why, Lee. I have Will in my head. It is Lee McCormick. I will remember that. But Lee, welcome. And I'm so glad you're here with us today.
Well, thanks, Cheryl. I appreciate it. And you know what? I'm going to have to introduce you to Will Tagle.
You will. I keep saying that because he's one of the co-authors, and I've seen him online as well, and I would love to be introduced to Will Tagle. But, you know, I have to ask you to start off with, your bio is really interesting. You begin the bio by saying, born into a tribe of movers and shakers, and I have to ask you, Lee, what does that mean?
Actually, that line came from the friend PR person that wrote that bio. But, you know, my family, the family I was born into, was a pioneer family in Florida. My family homesteaded in Florida in the 1800s, and we had ranches, and they were in the construction business, and my stepdad's family founded Winn-Dixie stores. And so, you know, I was born into a family that there was a lot going on, and the family had a lot of impact, you know, and we had the first two-story house in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. You know, so I just grew up in a family that were leaders in the community, and they were bosses for the most part, the way I'd put it, you know. So I grew up in a world where if you had ideas or you had a passion for something or there was something that needed to be done, you know, to take care of people or support the community or something, you just do it.
Well, that must be why it's in your DNA, because you have been so prolific in your life, setting up these centers and doing conferences and writing and putting television programs together. You're pretty much a, you know, doer yourself, and I'm sure being in that environment when you grew up really helped to inspire you to see that you can accomplish so much in your life.
It did. It did. You know, I just, they were kind of no-fear people. You just go for it, and you work at it, right? And I don't know that. And, you know, I think it was instilled in me that that the quality of life that, you know, you always leave a place better than you found it. And, you know, the quality and character is more valuable and more important than quantity or necessarily how much money you can make. You know, it's a different place in time than the nature of our culture today.
And those are such wonderful values to be brought up with and to incorporate in how you live your life. That's really what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, and so it works. It's work for me. I don't know. I've been living life the way I live life for 60 years now. So I don't know. I made it this far. Not that I haven't grown and evolved. Not that I haven't changed and evolved and grown over all these years. You know, that's the other thing is life's so much more interesting and inspiring and engaging for me when you are realizing new things, you know, realizing other aspects of life or deeper aspects of yourself. Or, you know, I was 40 when I checked myself into a treatment center, 20-something years ago. And that really changed my whole perspective and relationship to life. It was kind of my wake-up call in a number of ways, not just about the quote-unquote recovery perspective, but that there's a whole other backside to, you know, our families and our communities and the truth of what's really going on here among the humans. And that was inspiring to me, although a lot of it was really tragic and traumatic and heartbreaking. It was still inspiring to actually feel like I realized that there's just a whole other depth to life if you really bring the whole truth out.
So can you share a little bit more about that experience? Because you have been involved with recovery centers. Did you get involved with recovery centers before your own experience of going into recovery or during?
Oh, no.
Tell us a little bit
more. No, I had no idea. What happened was I had been married. Well, I moved to Nashville in the late 70s with a band and spent a number of years on the road playing music. You know, and it was the 70s. It was like the Scarface days. and like I tell people, you know, in 1979, cocaine and alcohol weren't bad for you. It was just part of the
the culture
of the music industry, you know. And you know, and consequently, I got off the road. I quit playing. I got bored. I just got burnt out with it, and went back to college and ended up getting married in the mid '80s. And while, you know, the script of my life, I wasn't in the music business on the road anymore. I've always played music, and I still do and always will. But, you know, that reality changed, and I got married, and the behaviors, you know, what had become an addiction, and the behaviors didn't change just because the external frame of my life changed. And we were married for, 11 years, and, ended up getting a divorce. But I had no idea about recovery. I'd never known anyone that was sober. I didn't know anything about AA or NA, or I'd never been to a therapist. And I'd been divorced for, 1.5, 2 years, and I was dating a woman in South Florida, and I was living on a ranch that I had leased in South Florida. And her dad had been in AA, and we partied together all the time, but, you know, she had said, look, you got a problem with this, and so you need to go to a therapist, or you need to go to a meeting, or whatever. So being in love with her, I decided that's what I needed to do, so I did. And the therapist actually said, you have got an issue, you know, with this, with your drug habit. You're addicted to this pattern and this drug. And she said, I think you would be really well served if you went to this program in Arizona, and I believe you would probably like it. Like, I think, you know, who you are, who I see you being, I think you would respond really well to it. And so, for whatever reason, you know, I trusted her, and I said, well, okay. And I signed up. And then she also said, and if your girlfriend goes away while you're in treatment, don't chase her. So it was kind of funny. Which she did go away while I was in treatment, which was fun. But that really started me, you know, that experience, the depth of the heartbreak, of the trauma, realizing how powerful the legacy that we inherit when we're born into this world, you know, the legacy of our family, of our community, of our country, our culture, realizing all these things that are aspects of what make up our relationship with ourself and our relationship with life. It kind of woke me up. Like, whoa, there's a whole lot more going on here than what I was taught as a kid growing up and, you know, what I thought I knew.
Well, it sounds like your soul was talking to you. It's time to get on with it.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, and I had some experiences. I went to treatment at in Tucson, and I was out in the desert. And I would be out walking in the desert, and I started kind of getting messages again. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up on around a farm in North Florida, and I spent a lot of time, you know, hunting in the swamps, and my dad ran cattle in Florida, and so I spent a lot of time in the natural world and on the beach, and that was always really my connecting place, the natural world. But over the course of becoming a so-called adult and going off into the music industry, I had gotten very disconnected from my relationship to the heart of life, which to me is the natural world, and, you know, all the spirit people that are connected to that and everything. And being back in the desert, that started coming back. And I had completely forgotten about it, you know, and it's like it reminded me that at one time what was normal for me was, you know, a relationship to the mystery of life, as much as it was to the frame and the physical world.
It's always fascinating to me how we create our lives and we go through the dramas, the, you know, whatever those dramas may be, but somehow they're all designed to take us to a place. Sometimes when we have to really just get down on our knees to wake up to ourselves, to to really understand who we are as a spiritual being and to reconnect so we can truly get on with the mission that we've come here to do in life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just what I realize today and the way I live today, this world is like a great mystery school to me. And, you know, I think everything we humans know could fit on the head of a pin, and everything else is just infinite. I'm far more comfortable with the unknown today, and I appreciate the unknown, I think, more than I do the known. So, and what I mean by that is, you know, my name's Lee McCormick, and I've written some books, and I've created some programs, and I've been in the cattle business and horse business most of my life, and I'm a surfer, and I've done a lot of stuff. But none of that is really what I am. You know, Lee's my name. But, like, I'm totally comfortable being me today, and I'm not sure what I am. I don't know what we really are. But I'm completely comfortable being here and doing what we do. Like, I love it. You know, even with the challenges always underneath, I really love being here, and I have no great attachment to when it's time to go. I'm cool. Like, I'm very interested in what's next too. So,
well, then that's the next big adventure when you leave this dimension, and if you embrace life and embrace the mysteries, then that's part of the journey. I understand that totally.
Yeah, you know, and it's a great place to be, to not have a fear of what we call death, you know. But, you know, I also believe my understanding with life is that we are here for a purpose. We're here for a reason, and the way we live here matters. And, you know, what we create and the choices we make and the quality of how we live life and share life with each other, it's really important. Clearly it is. I mean, I don't believe that what's going on in this world is just some random deal. It has some point to it that the Creator understands, and I don't need to figure out the Creator's business. I just need to be me and take care of my business. You know, so it's important. And the legacy that we leave behind is important because, you know, when we were born, we inherited the legacy of the ones that came before us. For all the good and all the bad and all the tough, we inherited that. And, you know, we're not, I don't think, responsible for what we inherit. And I do believe that we're 100% responsible for how we ultimately end up responding to what we've inherited. And we're 100% responsible for the legacy of life that we leave behind when we go on to the next.
So, Lee, do you think that most of us operating in this world have some level of addictions? Do you think it's like it's kind of a human, part of the human experience? Not that we have to stay in that place, but it's part of what is a critical aspect of our journey. And not everyone is addicted to cocaine or alcohol or heroin. There are addictions to food. There are addictions to relationship. There's addictions to adventure, you know, adrenaline. It seems that part of the process of being human is that we need to recognize how we use the experiences in our life to stay safe or protected or disconnected.
Yeah, it's multifaceted. I mean, that's we could probably have a conversation for a week around this, but we humans are creatures of habit, you know, and we seem to find security in the familiar. We find security, within our own belief systems, and we make up our belief system, you know, and so as we inherit the legacy, as we're born into the world, we inherit the point of view and the energy and the behavioral patterns of the family that we're born into. And then we're programmed by the school system to see the world according to the culture we were born into. And that's a very definite point of view, you know. And we inherit the the behaviors and the energy and the attitudes of, you know, our friends of the day and time. I mean, the world I grew up in the 60s and 70s is a completely different reality than growing up in 2010 or 2020 in so many ways. And what I see is that the basis of our culture and the basis, what's happened to the basis of our religions, is there's so much fear woven into all of it. Like the idea of fearing God, which is, you know, to the best of me, I can't figure out how that ever got sold. Well, I guess I can. But there's so much fear woven into the fabric of the world that we're born into, and it co-opts our perspective on everything. And once that fear becomes ingrained in our belief system and the energy of our mind and the filters of the way we perceive life, we end up being innately insecure. And we're also not taught as kids growing up that we're an expression of the Creator. Like, God created you, and God created you to be exactly who you are. And God created you, or Creator created you, to discover your gifts and your talents and to enjoy life on earth and to express yourself and to pursue the things that you have talents for or the things that you're interested in. You know, Creator created us to come into this world and embrace life and live life and share life. And that's an act of beauty. It's like an artwork, you know, like each of our lives is a living art installation. We're not taught that. You know, we're taught that in order to have value, we need to live up to the expectations of the religions and the cultures and the demands of education. And, you know, we're measured against each other. And we're more or less taught that for us to have value, it has to be earned. And value is synonymous with, quote-unquote, success or power or money. Or being cool, you know. And so I think the nature of so much of what we inherit of the world is really almost in complete conflict with the true nature of what we really are underneath all that. And so that creates anxiety. It's not comfortable being in your body. There's a lot of fear. A lot of doubt. Am I good enough? Am I not good enough? Am I enough? Am I too much? You know, and it's just never ending, and it's perpetuated through all the marketing. You know, you watch television or listen to the radio. They're telling you if you want to be cool and attractive and good enough, you need to drive this car or wear this perfume or join this club or belong to this church. You know, so we're being propped up on one side, and then we're also having our legs cut out from under us on the other side, and it's just not congruent. You know, so humans being what we are, we're really incredibly intelligent beings from one point of view. And when we're uncomfortable in our bodies, we're going to find a way to medicate that. And so, of course, addictions develop. You know, and we also have an aspect of us as human beings that we tend to be indulgent. And again, I think that indulgence is a result of a lack of depth of relationship to our own heart and spirit. So, you know, indulgence happens when you're kind of insecure or anxious underneath, or you need to be distracted from the anxiety in your life or the fear in your life or the doubt in your life. You know, when we get invested in living a life based in ego, it's inherently insecure. And so, you know, the indulgence manifests in a lot of ways. Overconsumption, you know, too much drinking, too much eating, too much sex, too many clothes, too many shoes in your closet. My wife says that's not possible, but it appears to me that it could be possible. You know, so it's like a big catch-22. It's really a trip what we're doing here. It's really interesting.
It's really interesting. And you've gone from helping to set up these treatment centers to setting up conferences and doing events that take people into the mystery, going into the Andes, going to Peru, Native American work. How did that unfold for you? And then let's talk about the book that you've just co-authored, the Heart Reconnection book, because it's very much working with these ways of the mystery with the elders of the Native American tradition.
Yeah, well, my journey, when I got out of treatment, when I got out of the treatment center 21 years ago, I was moved and I was open and I was inspired. And at the same time, I had a real conflict, an internal conflict with being presented with this information that in order for me to be okay as a recovering person, that I needed to acknowledge that my name's Lee and I am an addict. And, you know, a lot of the subsequent messaging that was attached to that identity, that being an addict, I'm not a normal person, and being not a normal person, I was going to have to be vigilant for my entire life around being an addict. And, you know, I needed to go to meetings and I needed to get a sponsor and use that sponsor in all my decision making because, you know, the way I processed information or, you know, my first thought was going to be wrong. Now, some of that was true. You know, you could say there's a frame where some of that was true in that moment. But the truth was, my name was Lee, and I'm a human being who happened to have developed an addiction through a pattern of behavior that I established. I created the addiction. The addiction was not like laying latent in my body, and it, you know, it came to life one day just out of the blue. The addiction happened because for 15 years I did cocaine a lot. You know, and it became an emotional crutch, and it became a go-to, and it was what we did when we were partying. And so, you know, the awareness that, wait a minute, yes, I'm a mess. Yes, my life is a mess. Yes, I am addicted to this pattern of behavior, but that's not what I am. That's how I'm living my life. And I was not interested in defining myself by that lowest common denominator of a behavior. And I knew innately that there was a lot more. And I had a craving to find what was missing. Something was missing. And so my prayer to the universe after 6 or 8 months of struggling, or a year struggling with the traditional recovery model, my prayer was, look, God, if you will bring me the opportunity to make a connection to whatever it is I'm longing for here, you bring me the invitations to go try things, I'll say yes. You know, I'll show up. And not too long after that, I met a Native American man, a Navajo man from Arizona, Dene man, and he invited me to a Native American church ceremony in Arizona in a sweat lodge. Well, I'd never done that. And I got on a plane and flew to Tucson and, you know, went to ceremony with him and went to lodge with him. And there were a lot of things that happened subsequent to that that was, I could say, was the response of the universe to my, you know, my offering to show up if life would give me the opportunity to sort the rest out. And those experiences were so profound to me, and they were of another, whole other kind of frequency. They were, you know, to go into a sweat lodge when you're in an addictions treatment program, and the majority of that treatment program is pretty much from the neck up. It's very intellectually focused, although, you know, you're working on feeling your feelings, and you're participating in different modalities, you know, and you're having a deep experience, But when you shift into a ceremonial space, you open up to a whole other side of consciousness of our being human that you don't access necessarily through traditional mental health modalities. And when you combine them, it's like the sum is greater than just the parts. And so I got inspired to start a treatment center out of all that and to bring these pieces together. Because we're all deserving of the best opportunity we can find to raise ourselves up, to clean ourselves, to heal ourselves, you know, to transform ourselves. Like, we're deserving of that. And, you know, it's not about being right. It's about being happy and finding peace and being inspired to live life. So my relationship with treatment and recovery through my own experience became a really creative relationship, you know, in creating recovery programs that were multifaceted.
That's so fascinating, because I'm sure incorporating those many facets through traditional therapies, but also the sweat lodges and more of an indigenous approach to things where we connect to spirit would have to, and still I'm sure is, profound in healing the core of addictions.
Well, it moves the energy. You know, if you have some traumas, you know, say you were molested or you've been raped or, you know, you've been in a war zone and you're suffering from really deep-seated PTSD from all the killing and all the violence that you've been a part of, that's an energetic, and it imprints in our being. I mean, all we are is energy. Our body is energy. Our mind is energy. Our emotions is energy. Our consciousness is energy. The experiences that we have in life imprint in us in different ways. So I could do talk therapy. I could do some psychodrama work. I could get engaged in the Western-minded modalities that access that energy or that the sadness, the emotion of the trauma. I could unravel the story of the trauma and how I relate to it and how that loop lives inside of me, the loop of the story that causes, you know, you have an emotional feeling and you flash back on an experience from 10 years ago and then that just blows the whole thing up and all of a sudden the emotion is running again through me as though I was back there 10 years ago. Well, those are loops that are very common in us as humans. And the healing process needs to intervene on that loop. You need to break that cycle and then bring a greater awareness to it. Well, when you go into ceremony after you've done that work, it helps clear that energy from you. It literally, the frequency of going in a sweat lodge and having the support of the spirit people, having the support of the elements, you know, the presence of the spirit of water and fire and the stones and the air and the earth, that is what we are created of. You know, all of that exists within us. So it, more or less, the ceremonial practices help us release the energies that are attached to us, that are not serving us, but they're also they're energies that keep us out of tune and out of balance, so it helps bring us back into balance. Really important, from my experience, to give people ways to clear that energy after they've processed the experiences. If you don't go into clearing the energy, then what happens is it's like you move the energy around and you get some temporary relief, but that energy hasn't left your aura. It hasn't left your being. And so to clear the energy is really where the healing happens. You know, you're not just coming up with a better version of a story that serves you more than the old story. You know, it's like moving the furniture around in your apartment. You can go in and move all your furniture around, and everything looks fresh and new, and it feels good for a while, but it's still the same old furniture. And eventually you're going to walk in the door and it's going to be like, oh, yeah, well, nothing's really new here. I just have a new relationship with an old story or an old habit.
Well, I can really relate to what you're saying, you know, in my own personal journey in the process of waking up to who I am, reconnecting to my spiritual self, I found profound healing through Native American tradition, through tradition in the Amazon, in the Andes, working with Native ceremonies. You know, even lived in India and had experiences there. It's so profound because those cultures are able to reconnect us to nature, to our true self, to our heart, to be part of the, you know, this great mystery. I just think we should, more people should really be open to exploring these traditions because they have such deep truth for thousands of years. Have been working with these truths, and we certainly need them at this point in time in our culture. So I want you to talk about your book, the Heart Reconnection Guidebook, and the use of the medicine wheel, which is a significant part of what you are writing about and teaching in this book.
Yeah. The medicine wheel, aside from, like, the mythology of it, and, I mean, medicine wheels, circles, exist all over the planet throughout the history of the humans, you know. And we chose the medicine wheel for a couple really basic reasons, that whenever you start to work on yourself, and you begin in the beginning, and it really serves us, human beings, it really serves us to have a framework that our mind can focus on. You know, our life is largely by the way we've been raised in the energy of our culture, the modern man world. Our mind dominates every relationship we have in our life. We're very intellect-oriented or reason-oriented. And so the medicine wheel gives us a framework, and the circle itself is an ongoing living experience. So if you start in the East, as we do in the book, we start in the East, and there are particular values and qualities, spirit animals, stages of life associated with each of the directions, East, South, West, and North. And as you start in the East, you're reflecting on yourself and your childhood, the experiences of childhood. You discover or recover or remember, and you address, and you're guided by the processes and the practices that are offered in the book. So it's a self-discovery process. Well, the first time you work through everything that's offered in the East, you move around to the South. Well, by the time you've come all the way around the wheel and back to the East again, and if you return to the wheel, you know, a year later, 2 years later, 10 years later, you'll have a whole new experience because you're looking at your life from that point in time. And more is always revealed. You know, we unravel in layers. When you work with people and taking their life apart, working through all the experiences of your lifetime and the attachments and the behaviors and the identities that we take on, all the roles that we play, we unravel in layers. If you just completely unraveled somebody all in one shot, boom, I think you would just be completely insane because you would lose all your reference points. You would lose your sense of self in that process. Now, you know, you may just, boom, turn into Jesus and you're the light and you're, you know, but I kind of think most people it would be difficult. And anyway, it doesn't happen like that. So the wheel provides an opportunity to work around and do this process with yourself and these practices with yourself over and over with the awareness that every time I come around the wheel, I'm letting go of more old heavy energy. I'm healing aspects that needed looking at. I'm changing my beliefs about myself and about the world. And every time I come back around, I'm revisiting my relationship with myself and all these aspects of myself from the place that I'm in today. So it's not linear, because life is not linear.
So would you say that the medicine wheel, which has been such an important part of many Native American cultures, is a spiritual roadmap?
Yeah, I think you could say that. Yeah. You know, it brings our attention into the moment, and it brings our awareness into the moment and into what the connections are or the aspects are that are represented in each of those directions or with each of those stones. You know, in my relationship with this work and the healing work, you know, I'm a white guy that was born in Florida, although my family's been in Florida since 1800. You know, I don't come from an indigenous tradition. I participated in a lot of different indigenous traditions. But the point to me is not about a tradition. The point to me is that we humans desperately need to rediscover a deeper relationship to life. And that deeper relationship to life, again, from my experience, must come from the inside out. I will discover a deeper relationship to life through a deeper relationship with myself. And I begin to realize more about me as a human and more about all these connections and relations that I have in this world and in the parallel dimensions that are around us. And so it's that amazing self-discovery of just how deep and broad and interesting we really are as human beings. So the traditions in the work I do, the traditions have protected the integrity of their ways over, you know, the European takeover of the planet and the mind, and that's been fantastic. And now, for me, it's about bringing these tools together and sharing them so that the humanity can wake up again. You know, it's like what you were saying. You know, you go into the Amazon, you go into the Andes. I've got Caro friends, you know, and El Sangati and up in the Andes. They have never not had a relationship with the wind. The wind is like a living being. It's not like. It is a living being. And when those elders call the wind comes. And when they talk to the water, or they're talking to the Urubamba, and you start calling the Mamacocha and the spirit of the lake to you, and that water starts moving, it's alive. Well, they never participated in being taught that stuff's not real. So they've not been brainwashed to a two-dimensional, kind of a completely delusional perspective of life and reality. You know, we're completely delusional. The mind of modern man is pretty much crazy. And we factor out the depth of life and creation that we're an essential part of as humanity, and consequently, we humans have become incredibly destructive on the planet because we don't understand that the Earth is a living being, that she is the mother of all our form, of our bodies. Everything that makes up my body came from this earth. And she's a living being. You know, and we've lost that quality and level of relationship, you know, and we suffer greatly for it. Because life is so rich and so alive. You know, we wouldn't feel alone if you wake up and know that the water is conscious and the earth is conscious and the wind is your breath. And you know, you can shift your attention into the light and be with your ancestors and your elders in relationship But those relationships require time and attention, just like our human relationships with one another require time and attention.
Yeah, that's so profound. It's so profound to understand that it's time for us to return to this understanding we are connected to all of life and that everything is conscious and we are part of it all. And by discovering that, we really find what we're all seeking, which is a sense of peace and love. I mean, your book is called The Heart Reconnection. Isn't that what it's time we do?
I think so. I mean, what have we got something better to do? Like, you got a better offer?
Well, you've tried other ways. It didn't work. So, well, you know,
yeah, it's
kinda
like,
know we're hitting dead ends.
You know, you kind of bring Tony Soprano into it. I mean, not for nothing. You got a better deal? Really? You know?
So, well, can you just briefly go through the four directions for those people listening who may not know about the medicine wheel? If you can just kind of share the four directions a bit more.
Well, the baseline, and it's kind of funny because we didn't follow a particular tradition in the medicine wheel. Mary Faulkner, who was the the co-writer on the book with me, one of the main, Mary and I wrote the majority of the book. So we blended some things together. So the East, the element of the East is the earth, and the earth is the element of our body. Okay, our bodies come from the earth. Our body is the densest form of light in the construct of us as a human being. And the East is also, it's the way of the morning star, of the rising sun. It's the direction the new day comes from. You know, I tell people that our breath comes out of the East. Every breath you take, the origin of that breath is out of the East. It's new life. And it's also our childhood. It's the direction or realm of childhood growing up. So, I mean, I can go on, and we didn't put all this in the book because it would have just been too much. But then the spirit animal of the East is the eagle. The eagle has the ability to see across the entire horizon, you know, from a very high vantage point, and then at the same time can come down and focus on one blade of grass in the middle of a pasture and a mouse walking across the ground, you know. So it's the ability to have a perception and an awareness of the whole while at the same time being able to shift your attention and come down and focus on a very particular point or aspect or situation. And then you move to the South. The South is like our teenage years. So it's that next stage in life. The East is the springtime. The South is the summertime. The South is the element of water, and water is the element of emotion. It's the next densest form in our makeup as a human being. You know, water is not as dense as earth, and yet it's heavier and more dense than air. And you know what? I don't know if we used the coyote. I can't remember in the book what we used as the spirit animal of the South, because I'm a part of so many traditions. I think we did use the coyote.
Yes,
you know, the
you
coyote,
did.
He's the trickster. And so the coyote's a trickster, and some people want to interpret that the coyote's all about play and, you know, being tricky and not taking things seriously. But at the same time, the coyote will turn around and bite your hand off. So he's not kidding. He's not a joke. He's not to be taken lightly. It's, you know, you don't want to be indulgent in life and be overly attached and be self-important in life. You want to enjoy and love and live life because that's the invitation of being here. And at the same time, be responsible and be impeccable and be honest and be appreciative and grateful and honorable all at the same time. And then we, you know, I'll tell you this also. The South for me is the direction of the mother. I have a very deep relationship with the Virgin of Guadalupe, whose name is Tonantzin. You know, the mother of the Americas, as she's also known. You know, people are familiar with the Virgin of Guadalupe from Catholicism and her appearance in 1528 to Juan Diego. So the South is the way of the connection to the divine feminine, again, for me. And the opportunity in that is that our cultures have become and been so male-dominated for the last couple thousand years that it's created such an inherent imbalance. You know, all this warring, all this obsession with power, all this obsession with control and wealth and money, that is just wreaking havoc and chaos on the planet and among us humans. It's a male-oriented energy. And to bring our attention back to the mother again, and to the divine feminine, not the, you know, not women competing with men on men's terms, but women stepping into their power as women from the heart of the mother that they are, that women have within them, and reestablishing the true feminine, you know, because the true feminine is fierce. The true feminine is not silly. It's fierce and it's intense and it's strong. So that all of that belongs in the South with me. And then you go to the West. Well, the West is, you could say, from 25 to 50, you know, age-wise. It's like the heart of our life. The South, the color of the South is black. It's the place of darkness. It's where we meet the mystery. The West is really powerful. It's the healing direction in the Lakota tradition. And also from the Diné people, the Navajo people, the Yeviches, the spirit people of the Navajo, they come out of the thunderstorms. They come from the sacred mountains, and it comes from the West. And they come to support us and help us to wake up, you know, help us regain sanity. So our healing work is coming out of the West and out of the mystery. The color is black, and it's a place of what we perceive as darkness. And the great story I love about going into the darkness and rediscovering ourselves again, rediscovering our heart again, is that when you go into a deep, dark, healing state, the way out of that will be found when you've rediscovered your own light. It's the light of your heart and the light of your spirit that you must rediscover in order to find your way back out of your suffering ways for yourself. You know, the West is the way of the thunderstorms, among other things. And then you go to the North, and the North is, you know, it's our elder years. So, you know, the North could be from 60 to whenever you check out of here, you know, and it's the way of the great mountains. It's the way of, I think the North is the way of the turtle and the way we did it in the book.
It is.
You know, it's reflective and it's introspective. It's having a deeper understanding of life that, you know, you're beyond the needing to prove things, and you have the wisdom of life's experience and the deep abiding relationships and connections that you've developed as you've worked your way around the wheel many times. You know, and there's just a calm, and there's a peace, and there's an understanding there. You know, I'll be 63 in a couple weeks, and honestly, life's cooler to me today than it's ever been. I mean, I'm like, I love it. I'm digging it, you know. So it's just there's so many invitations and so many opportunities. And you know, again, we say in the book, if you come from a particular tradition, that's wonderful. And, of course, take the wheel and redesign it any way you want to redesign it. What we have offered is a framework for people to follow in their journey and in their process. It's not about respecting or honoring a particular tradition first. It's about respecting and honoring the truth that the humanity needs to wake up, and we've offered a tool for that journey of self-reflection and healing. That's how we use the wheel.
Well, you know, that's such a perfect place for us to complete this conversation, because the wheel, which you write about a lot in the book and explain it, is, to me, is a roadmap. It's a way to move deeply into yourself and the cycles of life, which we don't really have roadmaps in our culture. So you've done a beautiful job with your co-author, Mary Faulkner. I encourage people to pick up a copy of the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. Lee McCormick is my guest today. And one of the best websites, I think, for you, Lee, is spiritrecovery.com. Is that the one you prefer?
Yes, spiritrecovery.com and integrativelifecenter.com. That's our recovery program in Nashville.
Okay, so it's spiritrecovery.com and integrativelifecenter.com. Check it out. We'll have to have you back sometime, because it's been such an interesting conversation, Lee. And I really want to thank you for the great work you're doing, and for just being such an inspiring human being. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a great day in Tulsa.
Thank you. And to all of you listening, we've been talking to Lee McCormick. He is the co-author of the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. Well worth getting a copy of the book. And check him out at spiritrecovery.com and integrativelifecenter.com. So until next time, I wish you all peace, love, and harmony. See you soon. Bye for now.